Today is Wednesday, June 17th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. A new executive order was signed Tuesday, but Americans are still discussing what's the root of its policing problem.
It doesn't matter if it's a few bad apples. What the point is that a few bad apples starts to rot the entire system.
Plus, North Korea rejects the South's offer to ease tensions.
Such a move immediately thwarts the efforts and achievements made by the two Koreas.
And China cancels flights in and out of Beijing as it tries to curb a COVID-19 outbreak in the capital. We'll have those stories and more next. U.S. President Donald Trump facing criticism that his policies and rhetoric have aggravated the racial divide in the United States signed an executive order on Tuesday that he said would reform police practices while maintaining law and order.
As part of this new credentialing process, chokeholds will be banned, except if an officer's life is at risk. And I will say we've dealt with all of the various departments, and everybody said it's time. We have to do it. Additionally, we're looking at new advanced and powerful, less lethal weapons to help prevent deadly interactions. New devices are being developed all the time, and we're looking at the best of them. And cost is no object. No object. Under this executive order, departments will also need a share of information about credible abuses so that officers with significant issues do not simply move from one police department to the next.
The order came after weeks of protests against racism and police brutality prompted by the death of George Floyd, an African-American man killed on May 25th while in police custody in Minneapolis, Minnesota. In his public comments and on Twitter, Trump has called for crackdowns on protesters and emphasized a forceful response to the social unrest sparked by the death of Floyd and others. Arthur Reiser is a former federal prosecutor and police officer and the director of criminal justice and civil liberties at the R Street Institute, a policy research organization that focuses on effective government and free markets. He spoke with International Edition's Lori London about the merits of the executive order.
The fact that the president is doing this and the president is talking about this, a president who has clearly aligned himself with law enforcement over the entirety of his presidency, is good. And there are things in his order that are good that I actually think can make a difference and really help move the needle when it comes to getting our hands around police violence in this country. I do also think, as always, that the optics sometimes don't play out the way that the White House hopes, but maybe this was actually done on purpose with himself surrounded with law enforcement, talking about measures that we're hoping will reduce law enforcement violence. And I think that right there says something about what is the actual intent of these measures. But there are things within the executive order that are good that actually might help reduce police brutality. I just think that, you know, maybe some victims of the families would have been a nod that this is something that we're doing together and not something that it is being done by law enforcement as like a nod for past bad behaviors.
What were some of the things that you thought could be helpful?
One of the things that we see a lot in law enforcement is, you know, officers will be able to, you know, basically escape liability or escape punishment and move on to other departments. And one of the things that I'm seeing here is that the database will specifically try to collect data on that. So officers can't just escape and move somewhere else. I was hoping to see more teeth along the lines of tying these changes directly to the use of force compliance. We didn't see that, but we do see there's going to be priorities given to individuals that incentivize the departments to meet these guidelines. And I thought that was a nod in the right direction. I think it could have went further.
He also made the statement that it's really just a small number of bad apples, small number of police. He used the word tiny to describe the number of police officers that are actually participating in this sort of abuse. Would you agree with that?
You used something that was very indicative of this problem. You said the word bad apples. the problem with the way that we view police in this country is that we always forget the second part of that adage, right? It goes, a few bad apples ruins the barrel. So it doesn't matter if it's a few bad apples. What the point is that a few bad apples starts to rot the entire system. And so I think that was an important thing to catch right there in that moment, that it doesn't take more than a few bad apples. When one bad officer does something and other officers watch that are good officers, what happens is they become bad officers themselves, because you cannot protect a bad officer and maintain and be one of the good guys. You just can't do it. So the word tiny is the word we focus on. Maybe. I think that the vast majority of officers love their country, love their communities, and want to do good work. But here's the big difference. They carry guns. So it doesn't take more than a few of them to be disruptive and violent and really hurt their communities. It doesn't take more than a tiny amount to change fundamentally the way that communities view police. And when you have a police and community gap of trust, you have very serious problems, because then you're really talking about occupied territory instead of a relationship between the policed and those who allow themselves to be policed and the police themselves.
Do you think that there are fundamental flaws in our policing, or is this something deeper?
Yes.
Okay.
I think that there are systemic and very deep issues in our system that we have to be concerned about. I mean, listen, you cannot divorce these issues from race. You just can't. I mean, it is too ingrained in our system. And as I mentioned earlier, optics are very important. The very first organized police forces in the United States were slave hunters. That is something we cannot divorce from what's happening today on the ground. The fact that people that belong to communities of color feel over-policed is something we cannot divorce from our problems. The fact that we have over-criminalized so much behavior that predominantly affects those communities, and then act all surprised that police are policing those communities more heavily, is something that just boggles my mind. And this is not a thing of the past. We're still doing it. I mean, think about Eric Garner, killed for selling Lucy cigarettes. If you are not willing to kill for something, maybe you shouldn't have a law that says you should arrest someone for doing that. And I think those are the kind of the very deep questions we need to get around. But going even above that, there are institutional protections for this type of behavior. Qualified immunity, that doctrine protects bad apples. It allows for departments to be a little more on the edge for what they allow as far as police officers in their cities, because they almost never have to pay the consequences for it. We have unions that are so deeply intertwined with how we govern this country, and police unions in particular. I don't think they're all corrupt. I don't think every single one of them has corrupt intent, but that's the way they have to operate in order to exist. And I think all those things kind of play into the overarching problems we're seeing play out in America today.
Arthur Reiser is the Director of Criminal Justice and Civil Liberties at the R Street Institute in Washington, and he was speaking to International Edition's Lori London. Wednesday also marks the five-year anniversary since Dylan Roof sat through nearly an hour of Bible study at the Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, and then started shooting as the group prayed. Roof spared one woman's life so she could tell everyone that he wanted to start a race war. He was sentenced to death and remains in federal prison. The North Atlantic Treaty Organization, also known as NATO, is kicking off 2 days of virtual meetings today. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg downplayed worries on Tuesday that the United States will rush to pull thousands of troops out of Germany, saying, quote, "The U.S. has made it clear that no final decision has been made on how and when," end quote. U.S. President Donald Trump has criticized Germany for not spending enough on defense and says he is ordering that U.S. troops in Germany be cut from around 34,500 to 25,000 personnel. Top U.S. and Chinese representatives will meet in Hawaii today, and AP correspondent Mike Gracia has this preview.
With relations between the United States and China having ebbed recently, a meeting between top representatives of the two nations will be held Wednesday in Hawaii. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo will meet with a Chinese delegation headed by the Chinese Communist Party's top foreign affairs official. The private meeting will take place at Hickam Air Force Base. Stephen Biegun, the U.S. Special Envoy for North Korea, will also be in attendance, according to people familiar with the trip who spoke on condition of anonymity. The various current issues between Washington and Beijing include China's handling of the coronavirus pandemic, trade issues, and China's decision to impose strict new national security laws on Hong Kong. Mike Gracia, Washington.
The United States has imposed sanctions on Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's wife and dozens of others as it announced a pressure campaign under a new law. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo anticipated additional sanctions and said that the United States would not stop until Assad and his regime stop their needless, brutal war against the Syrian people. In Europe, a Paris court convicted Assad's uncle of money laundering and misappropriating Syrian public funds and sentenced him to 4 years in prison. The court also ordered the confiscation of Rifat al-Assad's assets in France, worth an estimated $100 million. Rifat al-Assad, who divides his time between France and Britain, denied the charges. And coming up later,
a South Korean spokesman said Wednesday the trust built by the two leaders had been damaged by comments made by Kim Jong-un's sister, Kim Yo-jong, on state media KCNA. She said South Korean leader Moon Jae-in had failed to implement any part of the 2018 pact between the two countries.
This is VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
If you were in an area with very little light pollution and looked up at the sky on a dark, clear night, you might notice a faint green glow. What you'd be seeing is a constant upper atmospheric phenomenon called air glow, caused by the interaction of sunlight on oxygen molecules. Until recently, this phenomenon has only been spotted above Earth. A new study led by astronomers at Belgium's University of Liège describes the detection of a faint green glow in the atmosphere of Mars. The scientists analyzed the data they gathered from NOMAD, an instrument aboard the ExoMars Trace Gas Orbiter, which has been studying the Martian atmosphere for past or present signs of life since 2016. The scientists say the glow mostly peaks at 80 kilometers with another at 120 kilometers above Mars. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Scores of domestic flights in and out of Beijing, China, have been canceled on Wednesday as officials there ramped up efforts to contain a new coronavirus outbreak in the Chinese capital. Reuters' Gloria So has the details.
Chinese officials recorded 31 new infections on Tuesday, bringing the total to 137 cases since last Thursday. It's the worst resurgence of the disease in the city since February, and authorities on Tuesday reacted by raising Beijing to a level 2 alert, reversing a downgrade to level 3 just 10 days earlier. Aviation data tracker VeriFlight showed about 60% of scheduled flights to and from Beijing Capital International Airport have been or will likely be canceled as of Wednesday afternoon. The city's roads and highways have still been open, and people have continued going to work. But movement in and out of the city has been strictly controlled, and residents in high-risk areas must be quarantined and tested. The new outbreak has been traced to the Xinfadi Wholesale Food Center, where thousands of tons of vegetables, fruit, and meat are traded every day.
Gloria So reports for Reuters News. A Johns Hopkins University COVID-19 tracker counts more than 8.1 million confirmed cases of the disease worldwide. And the International Atomic Energy Agency has kicked off its Zoonotic Disease Integrated Action, or ZODIAC, project this week. Its aim? To help track diseases that move from animals to humans. Earlier today, I spoke with IAEA Director General Rafael Mariano Grossi via Skype about the project.
The International Atomic Energy Agency is better known as the nuclear watchdog, but there's another side to it. We promote nuclear sciences, technologies, and applications, including in the area of human health. The IAEA has a noble tradition of working on pathogens and working on areas or nuclear medicine, as we all know. We are all, unfortunately, touched by, in our families, by cancer, and we are familiar with nuclear medicine, radiotherapy, and things like that. This is a different part of our work, and it has to do with the application of nuclear and nuclear-derived technologies to the rapid detection, identification, mitigation of pathogens and viruses, in particular, those who are coming from animals to humans, what in the jargon or in scientific terms are called zoonotic. 2.7 million people die every year, let alone COVID-19, okay, from different zoonotic diseases, which may include dengue, chikungunya, Zika, Ebola. And on COVID, what we decided to do was to increase and systematize the efforts we are already having.
Can you explain a little bit more about the timing as to why now, given that these other zoonotics have been around for so many years, and how Zodiac changes what you have done previously and how you're going to implement moving forward?
I think all the other crises that exist and continue. What I think that COVID-19 has brought, I would say, is the same kind of realization that has been so clear in, I would say, every aspect of your life, my life, our family's life. I think it is clear that we were never hit so hard and in such an incredibly fast and global way all of a sudden. The other crises were serious, in some parts of the world, quite contained. So in the case of COVID, we saw this phenomenon unleashing itself in such a dramatic and rapid way. And I think this has brought governments, national governments, to start with, and then, of course, us international organizations, to the realization and the conviction that we must react in a different way. We must see what we have, that we bring together all these different strands, and we put them together in something that can be more effective and quick.
Rafael Mariano Grossi is the Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency. He was speaking to me from IAEA headquarters in Vienna, Austria. For comprehensive coverage of the pandemic, be sure to visit our website, voanews.com. Afghan authorities said on Wednesday, Taliban attacks in the country's north have killed at least 17 security forces and injured about a dozen more. The violence comes as warring sides in Afghanistan are preparing to meet in Qatar later this month for a preliminary round of peace negotiation. A government spokesman in northern Jawzjan province told VOA that insurgents overnight stormed two security outposts in Akcha district from multiple directions to try and capture them. Maruf Azar said the fighting continued into the early morning, killing 12 Afghan soldiers and injuring five others. The second attack took place late Tuesday near the northern city of Kunduz. Taliban fighters attacked security outposts and reportedly killed at least five Afghan soldiers, while seven others were wounded. A regional military official separately said five attackers died in the fighting and 10 were wounded. Insurgent officials did not make any comment on the fighting in Kunduz. U.S. President Donald Trump's administration is suing former National Security Advisor John Bolton to delay the release of his book. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani has more.
The book is expected to paint an unfavorable picture of the president's foreign policy decision-making, inconsistent and scattershot, according to publisher Simon & Schuster. The White House argues the book has a significant amount of classified information. The president warned this week Bolton would be in trouble if he doesn't stop publication.
And I would think that he would have criminal problems. I hope so.
Bolton's lawyer says the White House is using national security as a pretext for censoring him, saying Bolton worked for months to avoid releasing classified material. The book's release has been delayed twice and is now set to come out next week. Sagar Magani, Washington.
North Korea rejected South Korea's offer on Wednesday to send special envoys to ease escalating tensions over defector activity and stalled reconciliation efforts. Pyongyang vowed to redeploy troops to demilitarize border units as well. Reuters' Libby Hogan takes things from here.
This comes a day after North Korea blew up a joint liaison office on its border town, Kaesong.
South Korean Army Chief Chun Dong-jin on Wednesday urged the North to halt any action that would further worsen the situation.
Such a move immediately thwarts the efforts and achievements made by the two Koreas to maintain peace on the Korean Peninsula, and the North will surely pay if these measures are put into action.
The attacks mark a major setback to South Korea's efforts to foster reconciliation with the North. The demolished office was set up as part of a 2018 peace agreement by the two countries' leaders. A South Korean spokesman said Wednesday the trust built by the two leaders had been damaged by comments made by Kim Jong-un's sister, Kim Yo-jong, on state media KCNA. She said South Korean leader Moon Jae-in had failed to implement any part of the 2018 pact between the two countries and, quote, put his neck into the noose of pro-US flunkyism. But on the streets in South Korea's capital, business continued as normal and locals seemed unfazed by the attack.
It's just their way of maintaining power. I don't think they will actually go the distance. I might as well just do my job because I don't think a war will break out.
Others were more cautious.
If we shut the door just because North Korea is being extreme, they can react in even more extreme ways, and I think the damage will come to us.
The attack followed through on threats made earlier from the North, that they would retaliate if defector groups in the South continued to send food, propaganda leaflets, and messages critical of leader Kim Jong-un. Seoul has tried to stop the actions of defector groups in the past week and vowed to take legal action against them, arguing their actions actually fueled tensions between the two sides.
That was Reuters reporter Libby Hogan. South Korea's Yonhap News Agency reports that Unification Minister Kim Yeon-chol, who oversees engagement with North Korea, offered on Wednesday to step down, saying that he is taking responsibility for the worsening ties with Pyongyang. Hundreds of artworks from throughout Pablo Picasso's career are available online through a special auction at Sotheby's London Auction House. As VOA's David Byrd reports, one of the artist's granddaughters has put part of her inheritance on sale.
The auction includes more than 200 works spanning Picasso's career, from a pastel work just before he moved to Paris to a palette used for a 1961 oil painting. The items show the artist's hand in multiple media. Several items for sale are part of the personal collection of his granddaughter, Marina Picasso. She inherited them when her grandfather died in 1973 at the age of 91. Holly Brain is the director of Sotheby's Impressionist and Modern Art Department.
So she actually inherited the most extraordinary segment of the estate. And we've been very privileged to have been working with her now for a few years and have been offering sort of segments of her collection over the past few years. And this is the latest iteration of that. We've got 63 works in the sale deriving directly from her collection.
One item expected to fetch a high price is a 1900 pastel entitled Autour des Arènes, which shows crowds gathered outside a Barcelona bullring. Picasso did the work just before moving to Paris. Another item creating a lot of buzz is an oil paint-smeared palette that Sotheby's experts have linked to Picasso's 1961 work, The Luncheon on the Grass After Manet, which is currently on display at the Ludwig Museum in Cologne, Germany. Holly Brain of Sotheby's says the palette has generated unexpected interest, especially since the artist dated it on the back.
And so it seems highly probable that this palette was used in the process of creating that painting. So that's just a really interesting connection that we've been able to make, and it seems to have captured the imagination of our clients as well.
The auction includes paintings, drawings, sculpture, ceramics, editions, and photographs. Holly Brain of Sotheby's says the sale shows how the Spanish master never stopped creating.
I think the crux of it is that he just never stopped inventing and innovating. He can't be tied to a particular decade or style. He turned his hand not only to different media, but to different genre, to so many different muses and subjects. He was the epitome of a creative genius with no boundaries at all.
Because of the coronavirus pandemic, the London sale is online only. The works are available for public viewing this week, but only by appointment. Visitors must respect social distancing measures and must wear a face mask. The auction runs through June 18th. I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
You've been listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. And until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and good night.